It's Wisecracking with Winter.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's a day that ends in Y, and it's time for Wisecracking with Winter. It's across the pond this time. This time we're in jolly old England. Dun, 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 dun. You're asking why I would be on in jolly old England. Well, I'll tell you why.
Okay.
There is a great show that I listen to, even though I'm already a podcasting, I don't know what the word to look to use would be, an expert.
No.
No. A Jedi?
Guru.
Possibly.
Guru.
A guru.
Mike, you're a podcasting guru.
I'm a podcasting guru, and I'm talking to the host of one of my favorite shows called Can I Make a Hit Podcast, which is ironic because I've been trying to make a hit podcast for 5 years. What if I tried listening to this show 5 years ago, but it didn't exist? That's the problem.
Yeah.
I might be a little further along, but I do have my dedicated fan base. Most of these people, Rich, live in their parents' basement.
Yeah.
And, you know, exist basically on cereal and, you know, little snacks like Doritos and chips, you know, those sorts of things.
Yeah.
That's
you're not the only, they're not the only ones. That's what I do too, you see?
Right.
We're all doing it, aren't we?
We are all doing it. So I am on Rich's show, Can I Make a Hit Podcast, available on Apple and all podcatching apps.
Yeah.
To answer some questions to newbies out there. Or some guys that are, or guys or gals that have been in the game for a while, and that are starting to lose their focus. So we're here to help people out today. Today I'm helping people in America and everybody across the pond. So I'm going to let Richard ask questions. Richard, how are you doing today?
Okay, so I'm putting you on the spot today, Mike, aren't I?
Yes, you are a little bit. That's
yeah.
Fine.
So instead of the normal way where you're handling everyone else and you're keeping them moving, it's my turn now to do that to you. Is that what you say?
And it's so relaxing because I get so sick of being the ringmaster, Richard. I can't tell you.
But you're really good at it, Mike.
Well,
I've listened to you. You've got a great start. I mean, thank you so much for agreeing to this because, you know, I'm doing a show called Can I Make a Hit Podcast, and it really is about trying to find out whether it is possible to make one because – it's like you've done, what, 100 episodes now?
About 110 or so.
So, but that's staggering because most people give up after sort of 8 to 10 episodes. You know, so many people start them, don't they? You said this to me in a message the other day. So many people start them, and then we get this dreaded pod fade, don't we?
Right.
Where we just give up and something happens, something goes wrong. And I've done 5 podcasts before, and I've given up on all of them. So I've been through pod fade 5 times because – either the project was something that my heart wasn't in, or I didn't care about, or I just found it too much work. And I thought, right, this is it. I've had enough. I'm going to do one more podcast, and
right.
It's going to be called Can I Make a Hit Podcast? Can it actually be done? And there's loads of ideas out there about how to do it. And I just wanted to start talking to people like you to find out what has been the secret to how you've kept going. How have you kept yourself motivated? You know, how have you found the time? Because, you know, in my episodes, I've been moaning about just about every problem that I keep coming across. In a very British way, I might point out.
Right.
And trying to find ways through it. So what I really wanted to do today was to quiz you and pick your brains and find out what you've learned through this process. Which,
you can, yeah.
If you're happy to do it, let's do it, yeah?
You can pick what's left of them, for sure.
Is this a warning to podcasters that that's what's going to happen if you do
this? This is a warning to all podcasters out there. You've got to love what you do. If you're getting into podcasting or radio, and I wouldn't recommend going into radio right now. It's a pretty volatile industry. If you're going into podcasting because you think it's hip and cool and you want to be the next Joe Rogan, you want to be the next Richard Midson, you want to be the next me, I got news for you. There's 900,000 other podcasters all trying to do the same thing. And if you don't have the chops, if you don't have those skills, find a different fucking hobby, all right?
Yeah. So let's start, because that's the first thing. And that's one of the first things I tried to do in my series, was to say, we've all got this idea that we want to make a hit podcast, but what is a hit podcast? Because it's got to be something that is a hit to you. You know, some people might want 1 million listeners. Some people might want 10 listeners who love what they do. So What's been a hit podcast to you, Mike?
A hit podcast for me would go, for me, it's whatever's listed in the top 100 on Apple by category. You know, and I'm always looking at comedy because that's what I do. Of course, yeah. I'm not in the top 100. I'm not in the top 200. I have over 10, I think it's at 11,000 downloads now, which is fine because I'm just an indie. But for me, to be a hit would be somewhere in the top 10 on Apple. Agree? Disagree?
I think it's different for everyone, isn't it? No, I'm interested in your thoughts on this, yeah.
Yeah.
But that's your goal, is it? That's what your what drives you to keep going for what would be a hit, yeah?
It used to drive me to keep going.
Interesting.
To make the top 100. And then it used to drive me to keep going because I thought I could turn this into extra income through advertising. And I've had advertisers and I've lost advertisers. Sometimes it's my content. Sometimes, you know, I'll just agree to a 3-spot deal and that'll be it. But the advice that I would give podcasters now is to do some horse trading. Like my logo and my website I acquired from other companies, I traded spot time for their work, you know, them designing my logo, them building my website, all that stuff. So if you don't have any listeners, and most of you don't, and most of you won't get more than 10 listeners a show, and you'll end up pulling the plug. So okay. Do some horse trading, and maybe you play a little poker with them too while you're at it with your numbers. Maybe you inflate them by 10,000. Maybe you challenge them to go check for themselves. You know, I'm saying maybe. I'm not saying you go out and do that.
Yeah, theoretically, some people might do that.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It's been heard of elsewhere, hasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
But when, you know, when you started, Mike, right, you must have had a vision, that first episode you ever did, of what you were kind of trying to achieve. And what was that? And then how did that change as you started to build an audience and as you started to do more and more episodes?
The vision that I wanted to achieve would be a show of my own where I didn't have to answer to another radio exec, because I was on radio like yourself for a while, and I didn't want to go through the whole rigmarole of getting back on the air and reestablishing an audience and then getting my contract done. I didn't want to go through all that and then be scared half to death every week when the books came out and where I was at in the ratings, you know? I wanted to do it on my own. And 5 years ago, this was pretty new. There weren't a ton of podcasts out there. So I thought I could jump in, get a big audience right away, and be set. Boy, was I ever wrong.
So tell us what happened and how your vision changed.
Well, in the beginning, I did an hour show weekly, every week. I'd put it out there. And I'd get, in the heyday, I'd get between 300 and 500 downloads an episode, which was good, okay, not bad for an indie. But over time, as the market became more saturated with more shows, you know, Joe Bag of Donuts every 5 minutes had a show, and that's more competition for me. I guess I kind of look at the competition as by category. You're in a different category than me. You're more instructional. I'm in comedy. And I don't think there's as many comedy podcasts as there are everything else. So after years of doing it, I kind of let go of trying to make money and trying to do this as a full-time job and treated it for what it is. It's a hobby. It's a fun hobby. It's a lot of laughs. I love doing it. I have a dedicated crew of different co-hosts. I have a full-time producer that handles all of my online stuff. And that's enough. That sometimes that can be enough, you know? Here's your hobby you have a great time with, and you're not agonizing over money. If you want to make money, then go out and get a regular job, right? Yeah. Am I right or wrong? You're in the news industry in Britain,
yeah.
Aren't you, Rich?
Well, I was. I used to be in news, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm now in IT and I earn a proper wage that I can live and eat from,
right,
compared to news. In news, just like you, Mike, I had a lot of fun. I met some amazing people. I did some amazing things. But now I can afford to pay my bills and keep my car going.
Right. Isn't that a nice plus?
Yeah. But so you were building it up and you've kept going, but there must have been moments where you kind of went, look, this is a lot of work. And you must have had a down moment. What is it that drove you through that? What is it that kept you going and kept you motivated? Why did you survive and not go down Podfade?
I do have a lot of dedicated fans. Some of those are my friends. Some of those are people that I've never met. So I guess the darkest point of my life was when I was going through my divorce. And I didn't feel very funny. I didn't want to do a show every week talking about it. Because I usually talk about my life. So that was my biggest hurdle, I guess, in this whole podcasting career with Podfade, was when I had something major going on in my life. And this podcast is not generating an income. So I didn't feel that beholden to putting out a weekly episode. But once the divorce thing kind of figured itself out, I found the podcasting was very therapeutic. You know, I had to watch what I said. You know, I couldn't go on and put my ex-wife on blast.
Lawyers listening to every word.
Right. And she can listen to it, you know, and I'm sure she did through the divorce proceedings, looking to see if I was going to slip up. You know, so I found it to be very therapeutic. You got to be a creative person to want to do this in the first place. If you're not a very creative person and you're just doing it for the money, find a different hobby. There's so many different ones out there to do, right?
So in terms of the motivation for you, it, you know, one of the things for me, I realized early on in one of my first episodes, I kind of tried to look at what I needed to keep me going. And one of the things that I need, if I'm just being brutally honest with myself, I need feedback. I need some kind of reaction, because if I'm just doing it into the ether, you know, and I'm getting nothing, I'm just not interested. But the moment you start to get a comment, you know, I mean, even your comment on Twitter was motivational to me when you said, you know, like what you're doing. It's like to get that lifted me up. So is that the same for you? Is it that sort of feedback that helped keep you going?
Sometimes. Like I have a revolving co-host on the show. Like, one will be my girlfriend, the other one is the producer, and the third one is my 14-year-old daughter. But it revolves, and all three of them listen to the show, especially my producer. His name is Paul Lambie. Hi, Paul. He gives me the most honest feedback about every episode. He'll tell me if he didn't think it was funny. He'll tell me if I thought I went too far on something. So I guess Paul's opinion and my girlfriend's opinion matter the most to me than Joe Bag of Donuts sitting in his parents' basement in Detroit. You know, I'm not that concerned about what he thinks. And I've had people come after me before on different subjects, but there is no bad press. Bad comments, good comments. You're getting a reaction from people. So I guess that's good. Good and bad.
So so if you had to sum up the kind of, you know, that feedback loop for me is getting a sort of response. It's getting people saying they're listening. What would you say that feedback loop is for you? What's that stimulation that makes you, that keeps your brain going?
Like being stimulated from feedback? Is that what you mean?
But if that's what it is for you. Is it seeing numbers? Is it seeing Twitter comments? Is it, what is it that triggers you and keeps you motivated?
It's myself. You know, I'll watch the news, and I live in Minneapolis, Minnesota, the epicenter of all the civil unrest.
Yeah. So I mean, yeah, I've been listening to you.
Yes. That was a very interesting time. I actually didn't put out a show that first 2 weeks because there was so much going on around me that I just did not feel funny. So I guess what motivates me is what's going on in the world. You know, I've done stand-up comedy and things like that. I don't need the comments from the public to keep going. I don't need the couple of bucks you're going to make from, you know, some advertiser for a few spots to keep going. I keep going because I'm a creative person and this is my outlet. Creative people need an outlet. Artists have got to paint. Wise asses like me have got to turn on a mic and put out into the ether everything that's on my mind. You know, and like yourself, I think you're more of an educator. I think you want to help people, Rich. What do you think?
I do. I think also for me, and I don't know if you've noticed this with the stuff I do, but I'm pretty authentic.
Yes.
You know, I I'm at times I think I'm almost being a bit too honest, but I think in a way that honesty, because when you're being honest, it's harder to criticize people because we're just the way we are.
Right.
We have our imperfections. You know, when I kind of go, oh, this is just too much work to do podcasting, but I've got to find a way around it.
Right.
And instead of just going, everything's all, yeah, I mean, it does annoy me when you go on the internet, you see all these gurus, to use that phrase again.
Sure.
And they're all kind of going, oh, you will have a million followers to your podcast within 2 weeks. If, and strangely enough, normally when they tell you, if you buy my $2,000 course, you'll have this, of course. And it's like, you know, I hate that sort of pure fantasy. And it's like, come on, let's get real. Let's find a way to make things work, but let's do it in the real world rather than in pure fantasy land. And that, I think that's probably the ex-journalist in me that wants to do that. But I like it. But that's my creative side. It's that kind of just getting it out there, warts and all, and let's just see what happens.
I like that you do all that research on all these different snake oil salesmen out there. You get the people on Fiverr. Do you know what Fiverr is?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
You know, most of them are from Nigeria, and they're reaching out to you saying that they're going to make you the number one show for just
$5.
Yeah. That's a scam.
Yeah.
If you want to become the number one show, you should probably go out and become famous first and then do a podcast.
Yeah.
People point to Joe Rogan, who's the number one podcaster in the land. Yeah. But he was famous before that, you know? I think he really found his niche with this, though. He does put out really great content.
Yeah, I mean, he's a fantastic storyteller.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. I was watching one of his episodes the other day, and he got the guest on. Within the first few moments, the guy said, he sort of said, how are you? And the guest replied, and there was a slight pause in his voice, and Joe just went straight in there, and it's like, wait, what happened? And it's like straight in there. And as the audience, you're engaged in it. You're pulled into that. Oh, I wonder what happened too. So he is brilliant at it. Time and finding time to do it, Mike.
Absolutely.
You know, it's podcasting, again, is – I remember the days when I used to make video, and people used to think that the time it took to make a video that went out on YouTube, because I used to have a YouTube show, was the time it took from the time you press record on the video camera to the time you took your finger off the record button. And then suddenly, magically, this video would appear. And of course, the reality is that it's all the work outside of that. And it's the same in podcasting. It's time consuming. So how have you found the time, and how have you tried to reduce that sort of burden on you and make it more efficient?
I think you brought that up pretty early on one of your episodes about if you go out and you record a one-hour podcast, you're looking at 3 hours of editing. And that is 100% correct. And that's the way it is. How you manage that time. For me, it depends on mood. If I feel like editing right after a show, I'll go up and I'll edit. And I'll set a limit on it for like an hour. And then I'll just stop where I'm at and come back to it a little later on. Oh, that's my sister in the background.
Hello, sister.
Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah, hi. She's doing laundry, I guess. So, yeah, you got to manage your time. I mean, there'll be times when I'll sit down at the computer and I'll do like a marathon 3-hour edit if I have nothing else going on. I guess it depends on what you have going on. If you got little kids at home and a full-time job, I don't see how you even do a podcast, to be honest with you. Because you got to.
That's the real challenge I'm working on at the moment, because I've got a full time job.
Right.
And I'm trying to work, even just this one show, trying to work out how to do that within the time that I've got in the evening.
Uh-huh.
And at the beginning, I was just spending hours and hours, and I could feel myself heading for pod fade again.
Right.
And then I came up with this idea of having this kind of the 1 hour rule, whereby I will work for 1 hour and then try and stop. And although that limits enormously what you can do during the course of the week, it still means you've got 7 hours a week working on it, which is quite a long time.
It is.
But instead of just trying to load it all into one night or two nights and then go, oh, gosh, have I got to those days of the week again? How am I going to get through them this time? You know, it just helps to compartmentalize it a bit more and not make it so overwhelming.
Yes. Yes, that's how you have to do it.
Yeah, I think that's been really useful. How have you made things more efficient, though? Over 100 episodes, you must have started off wasting an enormous amount of time. So how have you done that?
Well, in the beginning, it was just kind of free form. I would turn the microphone on and I would ramble for an hour and then I would edit it quick and that would be the show. Now I have like a schedule. Like I schedule out my guests. My guests are always the same three co-hosts I have on the show. That I don't have regular guests. I don't have guests like you on very often because that's more work. So I've got my same little three-person crew that I have on, and when I'm editing, they've gotten used to the fact that I can't stand uhs and ands and sniffing and all that other stuff. I mean, that's really the most of my work is just editing that stuff out. And the more episodes that these people have done, the better they've got at it. So it's not that as much work as it used to. I'd say the most amount of work I do on each show is editing in my dad's comments. My dad is an infrequent contributor to my show. He's a 73-year-old guy, a Minnesotan. He's probably been on my show like 8 times, but I've gotten enough material out of those 8 times that my dad is now on every show commenting in different spots, you know? So I guess that's the brunt of my work right there.
So in a way, the answer for this has actually been to get people on board who aren't new and aren't trying to find out how to do it for the first time, but have learned the show, know what you need, and they can just deliver it like you. And that cuts down the editing time and the hassle.
You need people that can deliver and that are good at this. Not everybody is good at this. I've gotten into some forums on Facebook with other new podcasters who are wondering why they don't have 100 downloads an episode or 200 downloads an episode. And I'm always brutally honest with them. I'm not probably the most popular person in that group, but I'll say maybe you're just not any good at this. And that's okay. You're probably good at something else, like, I don't know, fishing or quilting. Something where you're not talking. Because I've listened to some of these shows and it's just trash. You know? They're not cut out for it. And that's okay. You know? You're good at what you do. I can tell you're a professional talking to you. But most of these people just are not. And they're not ever gonna be. And that's all right. You know? That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
I think the problem is a lot of people just haven't thought about it before they do it. There was someone on Twitter the other day who said something about, or they included my username and a bunch of other people, and they said, listen to my show.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, why? Why should I listen to your show? And I said in my response, I said, that's not a criticism. I'm not saying your show is bad. I'm just saying, tell me why I should listen. Sell it to me.
Right.
And so they replied and said, oh, that's a great idea. And then they said, I've got an update on what I've been doing last week. Well, so? I mean, sell the idea to me. Don't tell me I've got an update on what I did last week. Tell me why I should listen. What value am I going to get from investing 20 minutes, half hour, an hour of my time in listening to you? And
I wonder the same thing every week when I punch out another episode of this stuff. Why are they still listening to this? They must really like it.
Yeah, but the point is that you are delivering value. And yeah. I think also people can get that misunderstood because they think a show with value is a tutorial, purely a tutorial. But it's not. If you are giving emotional value by making something that is enjoyable and entertaining and people feel better at the end of it, you have provided them with value in return for their investment of time. So you are a value provider.
Well, thank you very much. I never thought of it that way.
Well, you are, though, because otherwise, why would people listen like you say? So you are doing something that people appreciate and value.
I suppose so. That makes sense.
Yeah.
You brought up a lot of great ideas when promoting your show on social media. With in the post, instead of saying, I just put out a new episode, listen now at wherever, instead asking like a question. You ask questions and you use quotes. So if I was going to put out this episode, what question would I put out about what you and I are talking about right now, Rich?
That's a really good question.
Because I can't, I'm not going to say anymore, and you can even double check me on this on Twitter when I put out a new episode. I'm not going to say, new episode just dropped and blah, blah, blah. Now I'm going to start asking questions. What question would I ask with this particular episode?
It would be something around, do you want podcast success, or how to avoid pod fade, or
hold on a second. I'm writing all these down. Taking the work out of it. Do you want to avoid pod fade?
You see, my thought on this is that if you are trying to promote your show, you've got to tell people in fairly quickly why they've got to listen to it. So I don't know whether you noticed with a lot of my social media updates, they're teases, and they're deliberately so. So I give a little bit of information, but I still leave something out there hanging, because I want people to get to the end of it and still want to know what's going to happen next or what's going to happen in the episode. Uh-huh. But I don't want them to just think, oh, I've got another episode out, so what?
So what? So, they're awesome.
But that's the thing. It's why should someone listen? Another technique that I'm actually trying deliberately at the moment, and this is from watching some of these influencers out there, and I don't know whether it'll work. Again, like my whole of my show, it's all an experiment to see what happens, is to try and build a story over a week. So I'm actually deliberately setting my cliffhanger, which will be the kind of the punchline which will appear in the episode that will come out at the end of the week. And then the idea is, and I'm going to start doing those in the next couple of weeks, is that like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday will build towards a cliffhanger. So hopefully that will build tension over the week where you're following the story of what's happening. And then to find out what happened, you need to listen to the episode.
So you're taking a page out of Wonderly's book with Business Wars, right?
Absolutely. A little bit. Well, yeah. I mean, I've only listened to a few of those, but that's how they do it, right?
Yeah, I've listened to pretty much all of the episodes of Business Wars,
and that is how they do that on social media.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't find out about it on social media. I actually found out about it listening to Bill Burr's podcast. He did a little spot for him, so I listened that way. And it's a great show. A lot of credit to the people at Business Wars. That's a good one.
Yeah, I've heard a few of them. I mean, this whole power of story, one of the things that I researched early on as well was looking at how story is constructed. Because I said in one of the episodes that I've always been a bad storyteller. And I referred in one of the episodes to me giving a speech at a wedding, which absolutely fell flat. I mean, it was so embarrassing, so embarrassing. And so I've deliberately, through this, been trying to learn how to tell stories. And so I've been like studying the Gimlet Media Academy podcast and studying all these different techniques. And I can see why, because Gimlet Academy say, and I can see the point now, that it is addictive to humans. Story is addictive. So when you create a bit of tension and stop, people want to know what has happened.
Right.
I mean, that's what Joe Rogan does. That's how emotionally we suddenly go, oh, what's he going to say next? And it's incredibly powerful if you can nail it. I haven't yet, but, you know, there's all these techniques that I'm trying to develop to sort of market it and build emotional engagement with what I'm doing.
Have you gotten a lot of feedback from people online or friends or whatever about your show?
Only nice comments, which is great to receive, but it doesn't really help, does it?
Not really, no. No. I like the critical, mean comments. Those are my favorite.
Are you like the guy who's it's a bit like, what is it, Jimmy Kimmel, isn't it, reading mean tweets?
Yeah, I could do a whole episode and read comments about my show that are all pretty mean. The meanest ones I get are when I pay to advertise my show on Facebook, when I pay for it to reach an audience, and it pops up on people's feeds, and they think that that's really annoying. They're like, I'm not listening to your POS show. Stop paying to put it on Facebook because you're wasting your money with me, signed, you know, Angry American X, you know? I love those. But once in a while, the comments will grow on these paid-for sponsored posts or whatever, and people will begin to argue about the things that I brought up in my episode. Like I talked about, for instance, Minneapolis thinking about disbanding the police department completely, where there would be no police, which is insane. That's the craziest idea I've ever heard. And the city council members that are responsible for that ridiculous idea are now having to spend $50,000 to $60,000 a month out of the city of Minneapolis's treasury to pay for private security for them because people are that mad, you know?
Yeah.
So I posed that question on one of my shows. Should we just disband the police departments? And that caused a lot of comments.
The controversy must be good as well.
Mm-hmm.
I remember reading a comment. Have you heard of this Instagram influencer, in quotes, called something like Chiara Ferragni? She was one of the original fashion influencers. She's got an absolutely enormous following. And her partner that helped to develop it at the time, when he's asked, could someone do the same now? He goes, no. Because in those early days, you could just be a fashion person. But now you must have an opinion.
Mm-hmm. Why do we care about their opinions anyway?
Because we want to get angry about our own. Either support. Either listen to you, Mike, and go, you know, he's absolutely right. I have to share this with my friends.
Right.
Or he's talking absolute rubbish. I must tweet about the fact how mad he is.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's it, isn't it?
It is it. I got a lot of friends that wonder why we listen so closely to what celebrities have to say on different matters. And why do we even care? And I say it's because they're famous. That's why. Why do people care what I say?
But do we care what they say, or do we care about how we feel about what they've said?
Maybe it's the feeling. About us? Maybe it's about the feeling. Yeah, and then wanting to tear them down for it. Americans love to tear down celebrities. Bill Cosby, for example. So maybe he slipped a couple of Mickeys and raped some women. Americans loved tearing him down. Loved tearing down Father Bill Cosby. Well, look at everybody thought he was America's dad. He had the Cosby Show in the 80s, which was a great show. And he was doing stand-up, and he's America's dad. And he would yell at other stand-up comedians about their blue content all the time, including Eddie Murphy. Because he was America's dad. You know, this is Bill Cosby, cleanest comedian of all time. And then turns out he's a rapist. And then America burnt him down for it. Is it the same way in Britain or not so much?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't even want to get me started on stuff like this. But it's like Meghan Markle.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, so the American.
There you had it. Yeah, so you had this fairy tale romance wedding, and then the knives came out. They gave a little bit of honeymoon period so that the couple could settle in, whatever, and then the media went for her.
Right.
Absolutely went for her. And, you know, they are absolutely dead set on destroying her and ruining her. And that is it. And whether you agree with what she did or not doesn't matter, because her words really would count for not much, whatever she said. What makes a difference is the power of the media to destroy someone or change someone like that. I mean, putting aside the issues, because there clearly are some serious questions, but like Prince Andrew. Well, again, you've got to ask yourself, well, what was the bigger picture there? So was he involved with Jeffrey Epstein? You know, we hear all these different comments. No one really knows apart from him. Formerly Jeffrey Epstein or the people involved in it. No one knows, but the media sure has decided. And they wanted to go after him and destroy him. And so that's what they've done.
It's a little it's a little worse in Britain, isn't it, with the media and what they print?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, we're absolutely vicious. Absolutely vicious. Oh, yeah. I mean, I should probably be a little careful, but I used to work for a politician.
Did you?
And one particular newspaper outlet, which I won't mention, actually said to him one time when they came to him for an interview, they actually said, don't worry, we will be nice to you. Now, why did they have to say that? Because the rest of the time, anyway, you can follow that through yourself, that one.
Right. I actually got a lot of my sense of humor from British comedies.
Oh, no.
Yes, Monty Python.
I'm surprised people still listen.
Oh, Monty Python.
Why do people say Monty Python?
Love Monty Python. And Benny Hill was the other one.
Oh, gosh. We've forgotten these people. Well, Monty Python's still part of our national culture, but
Benny Hill, though? Oh my god.
Yeah.
It was a lot of slapstick. It was slapstick, right? It wasn't highbrow, but I grew up on Benny Hill. It
wasn't too highbrow.
Right.
You can't get much more opposite than that.
I loved all the half-naked women on there and the little bald guy that he would chase around and slap on the top of his head. I love that show.
Man, you can't do stuff like that anymore.
I know you can't. Well, that was a great show.
We should get back to talking about podcasting. What did I ask you? I asked you about the workload, which you made a huge difference on. How are you approaching the future now? And how are you? Have you just sort of got into a routine now? Have you got into a habit? Or what is driving you forward now? Now that you've done 110 episodes, what is keeping you going?
I need to have the creative outlet for all of my thoughts. My girlfriend doesn't want to listen to me for hours on the phone riffing on the news. So I'll tell everyone else. She used to, when I kind of stepped away a little bit from podcasting, like a couple years ago, and she, you know, every morning she would call me, and every morning the phone call would go at least 35 minutes. And she would call that you are my new morning show. I don't listen to the radio anymore. I listen to you riff on whatever's in the news. You're still doing your show, but I'm the only one that's listening. She's like, I love you, but why don't you turn the microphone back on? Because I think it had been a couple of months since I'd done a show. And this is right near the end of my divorce. And so, yeah, I turned it back on. So the driving force was for me is A, not drive my girlfriend nuts, and B, I got to have a creative outlet. Creative people need an outlet. So it's not about money anymore or fame. That's all a fantasy. It's just having the outlet, and it's fun. It's a hobby.
So the key thing for people starting up is to actually look at what will motivate you, isn't it?
Yes.
And be realistic about it. If you want 1 million followers after your first week, go and make quilts.
Yes, absolutely. Or go do some horrific crime, because Americans tend to hold even criminals up and put them in limelight. So if you're not particularly...
I love that. If you want to launch a podcast this week, you can do it in two ways. You can do comedy like Mike. You can do research on podcasts like Richard. Or you can commit a horrendous crime.
Yeah, go out and commit a hate crime. Say Trump made you do it, and you'll be the number one podcast from jail within a few months. I guarantee it. How do the British feel about Trump? Because we're very embarrassed about it here. We're very embarrassed. And we're sorry. We're all sorry.
I don't know. That's... Gosh. Have to think about that. I mean... He is a figure of fun, a bit like Boris Johnson is a figure of fun here.
Right.
But Boris Johnson always had a very good popular brand as he was developing. And, you know, he was on TV a lot. He was funny. He was genial. So with Trump, was always that hard-hitting businessman. I've got one of his books back there. And he got a whole chapter in the book on revenge. You know, here's a guy that then went on to become president of the United States, and there is a chapter on revenge and getting back at people. So I think Boris Johnson, perhaps his path was a little bit better organized than Trump's. But I think you are expected to hate him. But I don't know. For me personally, democracy is about making bad decisions. Right?
Right.
And if you want to, have civil servants running the world. Fine, go for it. But in which case, no one gets an opinion. You've got to shut up. Don't bother with voting. But democracy is about making mistakes, about trying things and then changing it. The only problem you get is when you get something like Russia, where you've got Putin who can never be removed. So if people don't want Trump, you know, you can argue the political system. You can argue that, you know, what do you call it? The College of Voters or something like that. The Electoral College.
The Electoral College, which is something I think we need to throw out.
But you can argue that forever. But at the end, it's a bit like our system here, where we have the different MPs in different areas. You can argue that forever, but ultimately we've got a system, and if you don't want these people, get rid of them. And if you want to try them out, get them in, give them 4 years, and if they mess it up, get rid of them and humiliate them.
He should have never been in there in the first place. He lost the popular vote by millions.
But fine, but now get rid of it.
We're
now
trying.
That's what democracy, but that's what democracy is about. So whether you like them or not, you know, we had this guy called Jeremy Corbyn, who was with the Labour Party here in the UK. And if you looked at social media, you would have assumed that he was it. He was going to win the next election hands down. And he was absolutely destroyed at the polls. So, you know, this is where democracy wins out. And I think you've got to leave it to the people, let them make mistakes, and then it bounce back the other way.
Right.
I don't know. That's my view on that. It annoys me when people just go, get rid of Trump, full stop. Criticize him for sure. Be angry about what he's doing, etc. Protest. Fine. But don't just try and get him out through any means possible, because that's what democracy is about, letting people mess up, then changing them. To me.
Yeah. Well, I think you're absolutely right. The whole impeachment thing was a total waste of time.
Oh, but it was so obvious, the reason behind it. It was nothing to do with the rule of law and all this kind of thing. It was about just trying to get rid of it.
Right.
Now, do it because his policies are rubbish. Do it because you're out there campaigning and saying he is wrong because of X, Y, and Z, and convince me of that. Don't do it by some cheap legal trick to try and get rid of him.
They tried it with Clinton, too, and it didn't work.
Yeah, exactly. But people liked him ultimately, didn't they? He had a great brand.
I loved him. Yeah. His brand was getting blowjobs in the White House. In the Oval Office, I did not receive a blowjob from that woman, Miss Lewinsky.
That was not sexual relations. That was not.
It wasn't.
I believe him.
It was just a favor that she gave me while Hillary was out getting groceries one day. And she's still married to the man. I love that.
Oh, you see, that's loyalty for you, isn't
that it? Is loyalty. Absolutely.
I don't know. I think that's what democracy, that's what politics is all about. It's about trying stuff. But I just wish with modern politics, gosh, you've got me started now, Mike.
Go ahead and keep going. You used to be a professional in this area. So go ahead.
No, because I was in news. I wasn't opinionated. In Britain, in broadcast news, you have to be objective.
Uh-huh.
So it wasn't opinion-based stuff, so I wasn't allowed to say stuff like this. What annoys me about modern politics is that everyone says, you must believe me and don't listen to anyone else. And it's like, no, because that, I think, is the ultimate insult to people. If you say you should not hear other opinions, I'm basically saying you're too stupid to be able to decide what's right.
Okay.
What you should be able to do is be able to hear all the different opinions and decide for yourself what is dumb and idiotic.
Because
there is plenty of dumb and idiotic stuff out there. But I don't want some idiot going, you are wrong to listen to that person. Well, I don't even know what they're saying yet.
Exactly. You
know, if I want to hear someone tell me that there are aliens who are, I mean, what is that theory at the moment, isn't it? It's like that the royal family are all lizards or something in disguise. It's like, you know, let me hear that. Let me watch that video and laugh my head off at it. Don't tell me, don't you dare listen to it. Because you might not be able to cope with the truth or whatever. It's like, oh my gosh. I wish people would let us hear free speech so that we can decide what is stupid and what should be ignored. And there just seems to be this obsession now with suppressing anything that people don't like or some people don't like.
It's the it's the political correct movement. Is that what's driving you insane?
Yeah, but I don't mind if they want to come forward and convince me. I don't have a problem with that at all. I want someone to come forward and tell me why X should be X. But don't then tell me that I can't hear an alternative view and make up my own mind.
Yes.
So political correctness is almost the wrong statement, because political correctness actually now has just been about ramming ideas down your throat and telling you must believe this.
Right.
What it should be about is convincing me. You know, it's like, oh, Mike, you've really got me started now.
Well, I have a tendency to do that. I don't think anybody on Facebook that's posting political stuff, for some reason in their brains, in their small little Facebook brains, they believe that they're going to change your mind.
No.
With whatever nonsense they're putting out about Trump or the, on the other side, on the left side, about Biden. Whatever they're putting out, that's going to change your mind. And yeah. you're going to forget about what you were thinking at first, and you're going to jump on their side. That's insanity. Exactly. That's the definition of insanity, when they keep doing the same thing over and over and over again, and they expect a different result.
Yes. Yeah.
But all people end up doing is arguing with them. Is that it? You think that is that yeah. what they want? To be argued with?
Let's look at Facebook. Okay, so their attitude seems to be, let's say I disagree with their position. So their attitude seems to be, if they insult me and tell me I'm stupid, I'm going to agree with them. let's get academic about this and look at basic psychology. What happens when you attack someone? They naturally become defensive, because whether people like their opinions or not, we want to defend our opinions. That's our sense of pride.
Right.
So by attacking someone, you build up their bridges. You actually create more anger and hostility. So don't come at me and tell me you are wrong and you are stupid. Tell me why and explain the arguments to me, and I'll listen.
And that's the way it was at first. In Trump's first year, that's the way it was, with people trying to convince you to give Trump a chance. Just give him a chance. Give him a little teeny chance. Just like a little whisker of a chance. You already hate him because he has all these failed companies, and he's a known liar and a philanderer, and he cheats on all of his wives. Yeah, okay, that aside, give him a little tiny chance. Just one. And he blew it. And these people still think that we should still give him a chance. He's all out of chances.
But in which case, don't come to me and say, give him a chance. Tell me why. That's what I want to know. I want, you know, so he's done this wrong, he's done this wrong, he's done this wrong. So why should I give him 6 more months? And I don't mean tell me because he's the greatest. Well, that means nothing to me. Tell me why. Give me good arguments and I will listen.
Would you really listen? But would you really listen?
I think I would.
Do you think if somebody gave you a convincing argument about why you should change your mind about Trump or Boris in your country, and it was extremely convincing, would you change your mind?
Well, you said it in the word there, if it's convincing.
Or would it be an emotional thing for you? Like, I don't care. Yeah, this makes sense. Well, this all makes sense. But emotionally, I don't like Boris, or I don't like Trump.
Yeah, but all decisions ultimately are going to be a mixture of emotion and practicality, isn't it? And ultimately, every decision you make will be based on you and your perception of the world as well. So, you know, it's like politics is trying to appeal to each individual, isn't it? And it's voting with the way that things will change based on your needs. So the arguments for me might be different to you or to anyone else. But I think if someone came to me and told me why my life was going to be better, let's say with Trump, if someone came to me and said, if Donald Trump was president of the United Kingdom, and as a result of that, people would have, you know, more jobs, I would have more money in my pocket, there'd be champagne coming out of the water fountains on the streets, and you know, free ice cream on every corner.
And Brexit then, would be done. How about he got Brexit done in record amount of time?
Don't even get me started on that. You know, but if someone gave you those convincing arguments, yeah, I think I would. But come and persuade me. Don't insult me.
Right. Well, insulting seems to work better these days in the great country of America.
But do you think it works?
It works for some people, some weak-minded people.
But do you think it works, or do you think it just makes us more angry and more aggressive to each other? Do you think it's actually convincing anyone? Because I would have said that one of the reasons why Trump's still got such a strong, solid base is because his base feel attacked, and they've got so entrenched that they will defend him whatever he does. If he says the sky is bright yellow, they would agree with him because they just want to support him.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. But that's been his whole strategy all along, is to separate the country and make his base extremely angry at the rest of at the rest of us. You know,
but that's what he does. It's on both sides. Yeah, yeah, I agree with you. It's that whole divide and rule thing, isn't it? But do you not think that both sides are doing it?
Well, I don't think the left does it quite as much as the right.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to be his move. But I think the closer we get to the elections here in November, the left is going to start to get down in the mud with him and start throwing stuff to get him out.
Which is really sad, ultimately, isn't it?
Yeah, it's extremely sad because Joe Biden, the guy running against Trump, is not that guy. He's not the mudslinging guy. He's like the kind old absent-minded grandfather. He's like the Dr. Doolittle, you know? We're going to put him in there, and we're going to tell him to sit there and be quiet and do a good job for 4 years, and we'll get somebody in that's a little younger. We just need you to steer the ship, Joe, for 4 lousy years. Can you do it without saying something stupid? You can? Okay, then here you go, buddy. We need a nice, safe guy for 4 years. That's all you got to do. And I think he can handle it.
But will that election be won on economics, on foreign policy, on things like that? Or will it be won on how much dirt will be revealed in the press in the weeks coming up to it about who slept with who and who once touched someone?
I think they're going to do a whole good versus evil vibe. Like, Joe's the good guy, Trump's the evil guy. Trump is the guy I'm sorry, go ahead.
He must have dirt.
Oh, what do you mean? Well, that's the genius of Trump, is that he put all his dirt out there already.
Oh.
What are you going to dig up? That he ran that his real estate company, his real estate academy that he had for a while was a total and complete scam? That's already out there. He already lost a lawsuit on it. Are you going to point to the Trump steak company that he somehow ran into the ground? Trump Steaks? How do you run a steak company into the ground? Americans eat nothing but meat.
So that's all out there. What about Biden? They must have dirt that they're, I mean, the media in particular will hold that until the last minute for maximum impact.
I think the biggest piece of dirt on Joe Biden was his son making so much money in the Ukraine. What he was, I forget where he worked. I think it was some kind of an oil company. And his son made a ton of money. No, it's not. It's not. What is Joe?
It's a son. It's Ukraine.
Right.
You know, it's...
That's all they really got, though, on Joe. Joe's been working for the United States government for most of his life. The limelight has been on Joe. So, where are you going to find something?
Well, it's amazing where they come up with stuff. Someone will be paid to come out with some story. You name it. There'll be something. But I wonder if that's how the battle will ultimately be.
They'll be going to the whole pedophile vibe, that Joe is an old, gross pedophile. Look at him kissing all these people in these pictures. Joe's got problems. Yeah. Joe likes kids a little too much. That's not Joe. I don't think Joe's a creepy old pedophile.
But that's the point, isn't it? They keep hammering on the message. You keep branding, keep trying to change the brand of your opponents.
Right.
And it's nothing to do with politics and running a country. It's about just trying to make someone sound like, ooh, he seems dodgy.
Right. Yeah. I don't think it's going to be enough.
Very British, that.
It's not going to be enough. I think Biden's going to win in a landslide. In a landslide.
Interesting thing.
Did you want to try to do a commercial with me, Rich?
We can try and do one. Yeah. how do we do that?
I only have one sponsor, and that's my friend Paul Lambie. You know Paul Lambie. He's over there at Carpenter Realty in Indianapolis, Indiana, here in the States. And he sells houses. That's what Paul does. He sells houses, and he produces this show. That's his life. So, Rich, if you were thinking about coming across the pond and buying a home in Indianapolis, which is slightly better than Detroit. Slightly. I think a few more people can read in Indianapolis. That's the edge.
I don't know. I mean, Detroit is a city.
Right, it's a city.
It is a city, and it's got it has good things about it. But I mean, your place sounds much better, obviously.
Indianapolis. Would you consider Indianapolis a city?
Now you're testing my geography.
When you're thinking of the great American cities, right? New York, yeah. The Big Apple, yeah. Los Angeles, mm-hmm. Chicago, Detroit, mm-hmm. Motor City, Indianapolis.
There's something about 500 there as well, isn't there?
Yes, they have the Indy 500.
I'd come for that, definitely.
You would? Would you consider buying a house to go home to after the race from Paul Lambie over at Carpenter Realty?
You know what? I think I would. And the only question I would have in my mind if I was in that situation was wondering where to find someone that could help me do that, you know?
That'd be Paul Lambie over at Carpenter Realty.
Sorry, can you tell me again? What was his name again?
Paul Lambie. He's over there at Carpenter Realty.
Sounds like the guy from me.
Right now, he is sitting there at his desk working on a crossword puzzle, waiting for the phone to ring. Anyone.
I've picked up my phone. It's ready to go.
Maybe you should call him. Call him from jolly old England. Tell him you're thinking about coming over across the pond and maybe looking at some real estate. Just give him a reason to live, right? Because all he's got is my show and that's it. That's all.
He needs more reasons then, doesn't he?
He definitely needs reasons to get up in the morning. And you could be it. So call Paul Lambie to save a life over at Carpenter Realty right now if you've got a phone. Right? Paul Lambie. How was that for a spot? Did you like it?
Well, I've never done anything like that before. I'll give you that.
Yeah. I have no notes. That's all off the cuff. I'm not reading anything.
I can tell. You're going to have to edit some of that as well. I can tell.
I'm not editing any of that. It's I just made Paul Lambie sound suicidal. And if you don't call him, bad things will happen. And that's the way it's going to be. I love it. Did you want to plug anything? You want to plug your show, of course, right?
Yeah, can do. Let me just quickly check. Any other questions I really wanted to ask you about? I asked you about workload. I was talking about what was going through your head, how you did that. We were talking a bit about social media. Yeah, it's really the final bits, actually, I really want to ask you about is your advice to people starting out now. If someone comes to you and they have actually got an idea, which might be interesting, rather than just they just want to talk to their mates on a microphone, if they've actually got something which you go, there might be something in that, what should they do with it and how should they approach the process of starting a podcast now? Think about the experience that you've had.
What I would tell them now is to go out and buy themselves a very good USB mic just to plug into their computer. And then go out and get that editing software that you've been talking about. What is that called again?
It's called Descript.
Descript.
And I'm amazed by it, yeah.
Talk about Descript for a second, and then I'll finish my advice.
So Descript, in the past, when you edited audio, actually going all the way back, when I first started, I don't know about you, Mike, but I used to edit on tape. And we literally used to use razor blades.
Reel to reel?
The tape.
That's how I started in radio, was on
you did it as well, yeah.
Reel to reel.
So then they invented digital editing, and then you've got these sound waves on the screen. So they are quite literally just visual bumps that go up and down on the screen, and they create this line. And you can see the shape of words. So you can see an or an will have a certain particular shape to them. And after you've been doing it for a little while, you start to get used to it. But the problem is that you can't see what a sentence is. So you have to follow this through. You have to try and find a bit, and then you have to find another bit. You have to set markers to where someone said something interesting. But what Descript does is it converts that audio. And no, I'm not paid by them. I wish I was.
We're working on it right now.
Yeah. It converts that audio into a written transcript, and then you edit it like a word processor. So let's say I wanted to get rid of the third paragraph. I highlight it, click delete, and it does it. I don't have to try and scroll through to 5 minutes and find out where I started that sentence. I just literally find it in the text, highlight the text, and cut it out. They've got another thing as well, and it's not perfect, but ums and ers, it will identify and delete them automatically for you.
That would save about an hour of editing for me. Well, not on this particular episode, because I'm talking to another pro.
But there we go. I just did an But with a podcast project that I'm working on as a result of my show, which will mix together a lot of different voices. Now, in the old days, I would have to make loads of markers through, say, an hour interview and pick out those clips and try and move them around and copy and paste these sound waves. But now I will literally be able to look at the transcript, find the sentence they said I liked, and copy it into the right place in the script. And it will be as simple as that. And I'm looking forward to documenting that and seeing how easy it is. But the principle is there. So it is a great bit of software I've found so far.
Okay. So here's my advice for new podcasters.
Yes.
And it'll be at the 1 hour minute mark for you. Let me get. So get yourself a good laptop computer. Go out and buy yourself a very nice USB microphone to plug it into. Then I'd say go on Anchor, because I think Anchor is free podcasting hosting. Get Anchor. You should have a pair of earphones too. So you've got all you need for equipment is those three things: headphones, a computer, and a good microphone to talk into. Now leave it all in the box and figure out what in the hell you're going to talk about and how many episodes can you do that for. Okay, before you ever turn any of this shit on, know what you're going to talk about. Get a schedule together. Release your shows on the exact same day every week or every 2 weeks or whatever, so you build an audience that way. That's what I would tell you. So once you've got all that written down, then ask, if I don't make any money from this and I don't ever get famous, is that enough? Is that enough for me? And if the answer is yes, go ahead. You could be podcast 900,001. Enjoy yourself. There's my advice.
That's brilliant, Mike. That's really nice. Love it. Love it. Right. I think we'll stop this. I actually want to ask you a bit of advice off mic as well.
Off mic?
Yeah. Well,
then let me wrap the show up. This is how I wrap my show up.
Sure.
And you can feel free to interject. What did I learn today? What did I learn? Brought to you by your friends over there at Carpenter Realty. So please give them a call. Please. If you just want to call up and ask them how his day is, do that. And if you actually want to buy a house, that's even better. That's Paul Lambie over at Carpenter Realty. What did I learn? I've learned that I think I have a new friend in England. And his name is Richard Mitson. And he hosts Can I Make a Hit Podcast. And you need to listen to it today. If you're even thinking about joining the ranks of Richard and myself in the podcast movement, listen to his show first. You're not going to learn anything from mine. Nothing. I'm not going to teach you anything. This is the last time.
I think you will. Mike, I'm going to interject here because someone said on Facebook the other day, do you listen to other people's shows? And I thought it was the dumbest comment on earth, because of course you listen to other people's shows, because it's by listening to people like you that you get inspired yourself to try new ideas, to try different things, and to feel that vibe. If you are living in a bubble, I think you haven't got a hope as well. You've got to listen to other shows. So
you've got to. If somehow you learned something from my show, great. But you're probably going to learn more from Can I Make a Hit Podcast. Listen to his show. It's important. It's important that you do that, okay? Then go out and get a job. Go out and get a job, okay? I know most of my fan base is unemployed, and they live in their parents' basement. And they've been doing that long before there was ever a pandemic, okay? Go out and get a job. And listen to this show. What else did I learn? I've learned that, I don't know. I've learned a lot about politics on this episode. talking to a former expert across the pond and getting his opinion on things. I've learned a lot there. And I don't know. I didn't really learn a lot. I think we pushed out a lot that you can learn from us. How about that? We pushed it on to you. Now pick it up and put it in your backpack or in your brain. Try to do something with it. The end. Right, Rich? Anything?
Sounds good to me. Yeah, I think we've certainly got some good ideas out there today. I think we've provoked some debate. And I think we agree now that the way to move forward is to insult each other as much as possible. And we can then be happy. And by insulting each other, we can achieve political perfection across the world.
Exactly. So there it is.
That is my advice. That is my advice.
Listen to this man. He knows what he's talking about. And listen to his show, Can I Make a Hit Podcast? If you already have a podcast that's not a hit, which is almost all of us. And if you're new looking to get in the game, Can I Make a Hit Podcast is where you want to go first to get the keys to the castle. Okay?
It's an amazing project I'm really enjoying. And it's about trying things and seeing what actually works. And hopefully people find it really useful.
Absolutely. Well, I know I did. And that's it for me. Thanks for listening, kids. I'll check in with you next week or the week after. That's fine. If I don't put out a show, go listen to Can I Make a Hit Podcast. All right. Goodbye.